Well, hey guys, welcome back. My name is Andy Ryder, and we're continuing today and actually wrapping up our series on how you and I can experience more of the blessed life, the life that Jesus promises us and offers us. And today we're going to hear from Kyle Ranson on how generosity plays a key role in that.
My parents I always knew that they tithed and they gave. We didn't have a lot of money, but we always had enough to pay our bills.
I didn't have a lot of money as a college kid or anything like that, but I always wanted to be a part of big things that were going on.
And then when we got married, it was sort of continued that habit of tithing, even when we didn't have very much money. It was like years and years and years of God saying no to different jobs, you know, to increasing our finances, to us working harder to get out of debt. It was a lot of waiting, unemployment with two house payments and one part-time job between the both of us. You know, there was a lot of brokenness and frustration. I think it was a season when all of our cars were breaking and we lived in a house that was a money pit, and I think our hot water heater broke. And then I broke, you know, and I'm like, when's it gonna be our turn? You know, like, and I just remember he was like, every day is our turn. You know, every day that we wake up and our biggest debt is paid for because Jesus died for us, like every day is our turn. And that has just stuck with me for so long because it didn't fix, like, that statement and that truth didn't fix the hot water heater. It didn't change our finances, you know, but it really helped me have a different point of view.
As we have gained more money, I think God challenged us on it to go, are you for real? If I give you a little bit more money, will you actually do those things like you said you always wanted to? And I think we do. One of our favorite things is we have a line item in our budget that's called God's checkbook. It is just a pile of money that builds up waiting for a need.
A coworker whose husband died unexpectedly before Christmas, or a friend who really needed therapy, being able to pay for like 6 months of counseling for them, adoptions for friends. I think it can be like awkward to talk about money because it sounds like the prosperity gospel or like transactional, like I do this for God and then he does this for me, you know. But I can just tell from our experience, and we had so many years, like I said, of just hearing no. And he was still good and faithful, but this is just our experience now, and he keeps giving it, and we keep trying to, you know, be faithful giving back.
Jesus said that we should count the cost of following him. I regularly try to think about what could I have done with this money, and how does it compare to knowing Jesus? And it's like, I've not found anything better. I count the costs regularly. He always wins.
I love that story. I love it. I love what she said. She's like, this is just my experience, you know? Just my experience. By the way, I'm Kyle. I'm one of our teaching pastors. I lead our experience team at Crossroads. If you're new, you might have watched that video and been like, why did I come to church today? It seems like they're talking about money. If you are new, just relax. It's okay. It might at some point feel like I'm trying to reach into your pocket and take money. I promise I'm not. We want something for you, not from you. I genuinely hope that this message connects with you and blesses you. And if you have another need that we can help with, we would love to pray for you. There'll be a slide at the end of the service with instructions about where you can go for prayer. We exist to serve you. That's why we're here. Now, you are joining us in week 5 of 5 of this series called The Blessed Life. I'll give you the quick catch-up. The blessed life is the zone where we can sense God's power and presence in our life. The blessed life is not the problem-free life. It's not. Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble. But you can either go through that trouble with the blessing of God or without it. That's the blessed life. Now, how you get the blessed life is pretty simple. God gives you the blessed life when you give him your heart. Now, I'll say one of the things that reports to me at Crossroads in my work here is our teaching calendar, our schedule, our series, all the stuff that we do on these stages. And so I knew this series was coming, but I thought it was for you. Turns out it's for me. I had no idea how much I needed this series. And the reason is because I keep thinking about more lately. Maybe you thought about more. I keep thinking about more lately, like how much more things cost. We had spaghetti for dinner last night. My wife went to the grocery store to shop for dinner. She bought pasta, not organic pasta, regular box of pasta, a jar of sauce, a little bit of Parmesan cheese, and one pack of Italian sausage. Just those things. How much do you think that cost? $37. And no, we did not go to Whole Foods. Before you, I know what you're thinking. No, not Whole Foods. That's Kroger prices. It's crazy. Everything just costs more with inflation. My kids are getting older. Parents, turns out, when they get older, they cost more. That's what happens. You think diapers are expensive? Wait for braces. It's crazy. We got the estimate. I was like, holy crap. I'm just going to go to Home Depot, get a little super glue, you know, some wire. Probably figure this thing out myself. It's crazy. Just think about more. And then last week, the most insane thing happened. My house shrunk. Okay? Here's how. We have friends, they're buying a new house, a really big house, and they invited us over to a showing just to see it, you know, help think about furniture placement and, you know, all the stuff. And they're just excited about it. So we went over. We were only there for an hour. Okay? So between when we left our driveway, we go look at it, and we get back an hour later, someone broke in my house and they moved all the walls in by 5 feet. That's what it felt like. Showed up, I was like, holy, we live in a shoebox. I did not know before going to that big house. No idea. So I started thinking about more, you know, having more room, more space. And hey, I could probably knock out that wall and close in that porch and make it a room. Like, I'm just thinking about all this stuff. More just kind of has me. By the way, if you're sitting here and you're like, I just bought a new bigger house or I'm remodeling something, that is okay. No judgment. That's great. Praise God. God blesses us and wants us to have more. But I'm not talking about me having more. I'm talking about more having me. It's different. That's the moment that I realized, like, oh my gosh, I think I need this series. I'm so thankful for it. Blessed life happens when you give God your heart. And Jesus said, if you want to know who has your heart, it's really easy. You just look at your money. Matthew 6:21. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Will be. And that starts with the tithe. We've talked about that a lot in this series, giving 10% of your gross income to your church, which a lot of you, we realize that's like a kind of a weird thing to say for a church. Totally get it, by the way. If anything I say today, if you hear anything I said or anything in this series, and you're like, man, God's kind of poking me. He's convicted me on something. If you're hearing something, but you don't trust me or Brian or Crossroads, that bums me out. But okay, that's fine. Apply it somewhere else where you do trust. This isn't about Crossroads getting more money. We're good. We're paying all of our bills. We're fine. Don't want something from you. It's for you. So if you don't trust us, apply it somewhere else. But we invented this little thing to kind of help people take a step forward, maybe give them a little more courage, create a little bit of a safety net for them. We call it the 90-day tithe test. It works like this. If you'll sign up for this thing and try tithing for 90 days, at the end of those 90 days, if you don't feel like you've experienced more of the blessed life, we'll give you all of your money back. We've had hundreds of people sign up for it. Amazing things are happening. By the way, if you're one of those people, I just want you to know we're praying for you. There's a spot to fill out a prayer request. Our leadership team was just praying for you last week. We're going to pray for you again because we're just believing that God's going to come through and give you more of the blessed life. And my assumption today is that if you're in this room, you want more of God. If it were available, if God was the kind of God who said, you can have more of me, you would want more of God. And if it were possible, you'd want to give more of your heart to God. And if that's true, then there's one simple question we have to ask. Am I generous? As we seek that answer, let's invite God into the conversation. Would you pray with me? God, I'm asking you to teach me. I'm asking you to help me see your answer to that question. I ask you to help us be open and get every bit of you there is to get, God. Amen. Am I generous? Now, that's intentionally in the first person so that when I say it, I'm asking me. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me. And so that when you say it, you're thinking about you. So much of money and generosity is this comparison game, right? It's like I go to my friend's bigger house and I go back to my house. And I'm like, this thing is tiny. Money has this effect on us where we look at what everybody else has and we don't look at us. And so today, you're not talking about your neighbor. I'm not talking about the person next to you. I'm not talking about me. You ask the question for yourself. Am I generous? And I ask it for myself. Am I generous? And to find that answer, we're going to dig into one scene from a story out of the book of John, chapter 12. And I'm going to keep referencing this through the whole talk. So I want you to paint a picture in your imagination that you can hang on to for the next little bit. So imagine there's a living room, okay? Living room, you want it to be rustic, nice, whatever you imagine, living room. In this living room are a number of people. Only five of them matter for this story. One is Jesus. Think about what seat you want to give Jesus. Is he on the couch, the floor, is he in an armchair? Put Jesus in your picture. The second is Judas. Yes, that Judas, the one who would betray Jesus. Only 6 days after this scene, by the way, for 30 pieces of silver. That Judas is there. And then these three siblings, Mary, Martha, and their brother Lazarus. And it's their house that we're in. Okay, you got that picture in your mind? I'll read you the story. John 12, verse 1. Then 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, who had been dead, whom he had raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of those who sat at the table with him. Then Mary took a pound of very costly oil of spikenard, anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. But one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, who would betray him, said, "Why was this fragrant oil not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief. And he had the money box, and he used to take what was put in it. Okay, so this scene. Weird scene, right? There's Mary. She's got a jar of oil. Judas says it costs 300 denarii. What that is a year's wages. How much? I want you to imagine what you make in a year. What's your annual salary? That's how much this is worth. And she takes this bottle, and she does the most odd thing. She doesn't gift it to him. She actually opens it, gets down on her knees, and pours it on his feet, and then starts wiping them with her hair. What? Then there's Judas. Judas, for some reason, is holding the money box. And he makes this comment about her act with a jar of oil, and he's like, "Ah, I should have been given to the poor." Strange scene. But it holds the answer to our question, am I generous? To answer that one, we have to ask three others. It's three important questions to answer about this scene. One is, why does Judas have the money box? Jesus' money in his possession. That's odd. I mean, there's 11 other disciples, pretty trustworthy guys, as it turns out, and then one dud. The dud's holding the box. Why? Strange. Then we have to ask the question, what's actually in the box? What is this money, and where did it come from? And then the third question is about the jar of oil. Why would Mary give such an extravagant and odd gift? Strange. Were you asking those questions? There's also two hearts on display here. There's a heart of generosity, and there's a heart of selfishness in this story. And I want you to notice what revealed each heart. It's giving. Am I generous? Now, I think we all want to be generous. I genuinely do. I believe the best. I think we want to be generous, but we're born selfish. Brian and Chuck talked about how a child, one of their first words is always, "Mine, mine," you know? Never have to teach that to your kids. They just come out saying it. It's crazy. I had a mine moment this week. A friend of mine, real estate agent, bought us an apple pie for Thanksgiving. We'd supported his business, sent a client his way this year, and just wanted to say thanks. So sent us an apple pie, which I was very excited about because I love apple pies. I was like, yes, getting a free apple pie is so great. So we sent somebody over to drop it off, leave it on our doorstep. But as they were in our driveway, one of our neighbors was walking through our yard, saw the person putting the pie on our doorstep and said, "You know what? They're out of town. I'll take it." Do you know the problem with that? I was not out of town. And they have still not brought me my pie. Still. This happened, and I was like, this doesn't make any sense. That word, what? You know, that pie is mine. My wife was very gracious. She's like, "Babe, it's like a $12 pie. Like, we're fine. We'll go get a pie." I was like, "We are not fine. That pie is mine. Mine." Do you know God uses the word mine when he talks about the tithe, the first 10% of all of our income? He says, it's mine. So I want you to think about this. Imagine with me the glorious scenario of my neighbor actually returning to the pie. They didn't do it, but imagine they'd come into my door and they knocked on it, you know, open the door and they're, hey, I believe this is yours. Here you go. And they put it back into my hands. Would I look at my neighbor and say, oh my gosh, thank you for being so generous to me? Would I? No. Why? It wasn't their pie. It was mine. It's mine. See, you can't give what's not yours. This is what God says about the tithe. You can return it, and you might be blessed with a thank you. You know, I would have been grateful, but it's different. Generosity, am I generous? Generosity is about what I do with what's truly, actually mine. In the story, Judas appears, attempts to appear anyway, doesn't appear, attempts to appear generous by pointing out at something that's definitely not his, the jar of oil. He sees Mary doing this and he's like, ha, that should have been sold and given to the poor. What a waste. Money could have been given to the poor. You ever heard that said anywhere? Or have you ever said it? Maybe you said it when you walked in here today, right? Maybe you saw these video screens and you're like, ah, how much was that? So much. These lights, so expensive. That money could have been given to the poor. By the way, if you did that, that's exactly what I did the first time I came to Crossroads, so it's okay. It is. 2002, my parents invited me, and I had heard of flat-screen TVs, but I'd never seen one. You guys remember these days? Back before flat-screen TVs, they were like perfect cubes, and they weighed 1,000 pounds. That was a television. I'd heard about flat screens, read about them in Wired magazine, and I walked into the atrium out here, and I saw for the very first time flat screens televisions, which I knew to cost $10,000 a piece. And I was like, one, two, three, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, $60,000. I counted six of them. $60,000. I looked at my parents and said, what kind of place is this? That money should have been given to the poor. Now, do you know how much money I was giving at that point in my life? $0. Yep. But if you'd asked me, you said, Kyle, are you generous? That's our question. Am I generous? If you'd asked me, I would have genuinely said, yes, I'm generous. I'm a generous-minded person. I mean, there are those times where I've given, you know, $5 in the Salvation Army thing, or the cashier at the checkout asked me if I wanted to round up and donate my change, and sometimes I say yes. Not always. I'm not crazy, you know, but sometimes, sometimes I say yes. I think I'm a generous person. But the truth is, if we look at our scene with Mary, Martha, Jesus, of everybody in that scene, the person I was most like was Judas. So let's ask the question, why would Jesus put his money in the hands of Judas? Like, did Jesus not know that he was so bad, you know what I mean? Like, maybe he just didn't know, even though he spent all his time with him, he had no idea the guy was kind of off? Is that it? Well, the answer is no. 2 years before this scene, there's another scene. Jesus looks at his 12 disciples, and he says, did I not choose you 12, and one of you is a devil? I mean, think about how sharp that is. He knew, right? I mean, that's a moment of anger. It's like, ugh. He knew. So why would he give him the money box? Maybe he was tempting him in hopes that he would fail early, it'd be a public thing, spectacle, and he could like catch him in the act and kick him out before he betrayed him later on. Maybe that's what it was? Well, that's also can't be the answer. In James, the Bible says that God tempts no one. He will test you, but he won't tempt you. See, the money box, Jesus' money, was in Judas' hands, not because Jesus was tempting him in hopes he would fail. He was testing him and giving him every opportunity to pass. That's why. You know, our hearts can't test themselves. God can. Only God can. In Jeremiah, God says, I test the heart. Why? Because it can't test itself. Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is more deceitful than anything else and incurable. Who can understand it? See, the answer to our question, am I generous, doesn't come from us. I actually can't give myself that answer. It's not about what we think or what we feel or what we imagine, or we're a generously minded person. It's exclusively about the results that God sees when he tests our hearts. And I want you to think carefully about this. Because do you know that God would say he's put his money box into our hands too? First 10% is in our accounts. And he's not tempting us in hopes that we'll fail. He's testing us, giving us every opportunity to pass. Malachi 3 says, "Will a mere mortal rob God? Yet you rob me. But you ask, how are we robbing you? In tithes and offerings. You're under a curse, your whole nation, because you're robbing me." And notice this tone change. "Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it." He's like, please, if you'll do this, I'll just bless you so much. You know, God is the better, he's a better parent than me, okay? Way better parent. He's the positive reward kind of parent. That's not me. I am the threatened, irrational, negative consequence kind of parent. Maybe you can sympathize. If my kid doesn't clean their room, I'm like, you do clean your room, you're going to sleep outside for a month. I don't know. And they look at me, they're like, Dad, this is probably not going to happen. Like, I know, I couldn't think of anything else. It's what I said, you know. Go get your clothes, get out of here. That's not God. God is the positive rewarder parent. He doesn't threaten. If you don't, oh, he just says, hey, it'd be so much better if you pass the test. And if you will, I will positively reward, I'll give you the blessed life. That's what I'll give you. Please hear me clearly. If you've been sitting through this series, or maybe you're here right now and you're feeling this poke in your chest from God, there's a difference between condemnation and conviction. God is not the God of condemnation. He's not. He's not condemning you. He's not looking at you going, oh, you've been so bad. It's not God. But he might be convicting you. Conviction can be good. And his question is, will you respond? For me, I had to come to the point in my life to humbly conclude I was being like Judas and I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be. I just decided I wanted to pass the test. You know, it wasn't easy. In order to give the tithe, the first time I was 23 years old, and I had to live with my parents, which nothing wrong with that, just wasn't my dream at 23. Not what I wanted to do, but what I had to do in order to pass the test. It wasn't easy, but it was simple. Simple because I just decided I wanted to pass the test more than I wanted anything else. That's it. And I'm telling you, that's the opportunity that God has for you. Did you notice in Malachi, he didn't just talk about tithes. He talked about tithes and offerings. What's the difference between them? Well, tithes, what we spent most of this series on so far, is about me listening to what God is saying to me. God says, that's mine, please return it. Me listening to him. Offerings is like the mirror image. It's God listening to what I might want to say to him, generosity, to give of what's truly mine, to make an offering. Now, both of them are plural. Tithes is plural because it happens every time you get paid. Offerings is plural because there's basically two types of offering. They're kind of regular, ongoing, above tithe giving. That's an offering. And we see a lot of examples in the Bible of this. One of them is the answer to our question. What is the money in the box and where did it come from? Well, I only recently discovered this. This is in September. I got to go to Israel and I was there with this brilliant guy and he read us this passage I'll read you right now. This is Luke 8, 1 through 3. And it's kind of one of those like throwaway sections almost. You usually skip over. And I got to the end and I noticed something that just jumped out to me. It says, after this, Jesus traveled about from one town and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had come out, Joanna, the wife of Chuza, the manager of Herod's household, Susanna, and many others. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. So heard this read by this theologian, author, archaeologist, standing in Magdala, Mary Magdalene, she's from Magdala, standing in her hometown, looking at what might have been her house. And I looked at that, I was like, hey, I have a question. Me in the back here, quick question. It says out of their own means. Does that mean it was above tithe giving? And he was like, oh yeah, absolutely. These were good Jewish women. They would have paid their tithe, that would have gone to the temple. Supporting him out of their own means absolutely means it's coming out of their 90%. Think about that. Do you know the ministry of Jesus wasn't funded on returning? It was funded on generosity. It's amazing to me. So Sarah and I We've done this for, I want to say every year we've been married 16 years, but maybe we didn't the first year. So I'll say 15 out of 16 years, we've gone beyond the tithe in giving. Why? Well, one, God's never asked us to. Never had a moment where I felt like God went, hey, you know what I want you to do? Bump that up. Go ahead. It's mine. I think God's okay with me doing what I want to with what's mine. But see, I want to be generous like God, who's been generous to me. And so we've gone above and beyond. It looks like giving above the tithe and more regular things. But there's also this other level of offering, extravagant offerings. It seems to be a thing that God might invite you to do a few times in your life. If you take a step forward and make an offer, it seems like God will step in and say, yeah, you know what? I would like something extravagant right now. Extravagant offerings. Extravagance just means far more than is normal. And what you're doing with an extravagant offering is you're mirroring God, who gave extravagantly his own son. So many examples. For sure, Mary's example would qualify. I think we can all imagine, again, what do you make in a year? That's what this is. And she gave it. That'd be extravagant, yes? Very extravagant. There's another one, King David in the Bible, like David and Goliath. David, he funded and bought all the building materials for the temple, every scrap of wood, bit of gold, silver, all the stuff. In today's dollars, it'd be $21 billion with a B dollars that he offered above and beyond. But do you know there's an even more extravagant offering in the Bible? It's when a widow gave 2 mites, 2 pennies. It's the only time Jesus ever stops and he's like, whoa, look at that. That is impressive. It's Luke 21, verse 1. Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury, and he saw also a certain widow putting in 2 mites. So he said, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all, for all these out of their abundance have put in offerings for God. But she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had. See, what makes a gift extravagant, it's not the amount. It's the heart behind the amount. See, a generous heart is an extravagant heart. So a number of years ago, Sarah and I were on a trip just hanging out with some friends, Brian, Libby, and a few other friends. We're on a boat, and we're learning to wake surf, which if you've never done it, you have this tiny little surfboard that's strapped to your feet, and you kind of sit down in the water holding a rope attached to the boat, and the boat just like takes off, just generates all this pressure, and your job is to hold onto the rope and then pop out of the water. Okay, and Sarah was in there. She was doing it. She said, she's having trouble holding the rope. It just kept shooting out of her hands. And so eventually she got tired. She's like, I'll try again later. She climbs into the boat, starts toweling off and stuff. And then she notices that her diamond from her engagement ring is gone. Gone. One of the times, apparently, she was holding the rope and it popped out of her hand. The rope just shot the diamond right out and it is now at the bottom of Lake Norris. So anybody looking for a diamond engagement ring, the holiday season, good news, there's a free one if you'll go find it at the bottom of Lake Norris. Never found it. Never found it. And she climbs in the boat and she's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's gone. This is awful. And I had a moment of panic. And then I was like, ha, wait a minute. I just remembered something. Babe, don't worry. I'm so smart. I took out an insurance policy when I bought that thing all those years ago. So we're good. It's part of our homeowner's insurance. You know, relax. And I just kind of turn around, go back. And she looks at me and she's like, about that. I canceled it 2 years ago. And I was like, what'd you say? You know, gosh, it's gone. So no ring. And it was that way for a number of years. You know, we didn't immediately replace it. We don't have the cash just sitting around to go buy a new ring. And so a number of years went by, and our 15-year wedding anniversary was last year. And I decided for our 15-year wedding anniversary, I'm going to replace that ring. We're getting you a new one, you know, buying you a new one. And my wife's the kind of wife who you don't want to surprise with a ring, okay? Maybe some others in the room are like this. You don't want a surprise. You'd like to know you can get a ring and then go pick it out. So I was like, buying you a ring, go pick it out. She was so thankful. She was really excited. Starts looking around online, and she'd show me the rings she was looking at. And every time she'd show me one, I'd look at it and be like, that's only a few hundred dollars. You know, the ring you lost was worth way more than that. A few hundred dollars. Get you something nicer than that. She's like, but I don't really need anything nicer. And I don't really, that's not really what I'm asking for. I'm just this is good enough for me. And I had to finally sit her down. I was like, babe, stop. I don't want to buy you a few $100 ring. I want to buy you a few $1,000 ring. Please look for something nicer. And so eventually she did, and that's what she got. Now, why would I do that? Husbands, let's talk just for a minute. Everybody else, clear out, you know, mentally. Go to your happy place, whatever, just husbands. Why would I buy my wife something nicer than the thing she's asking me for? Because I was trying to impress her. That's why. It's 100% why. I wanted to impress her. And think about it. What's an impression? If I took my nails and I jammed them into my palm and I took them away, you can see little marks. That's an impression. Impression means I leave a mark that leaves no doubt. That's what I wanted to do for my wife. I wanted that every morning when she woke up and she put on her ring, she remembered my husband loves me extravagantly. I was trying to impress her. I think it's a spiritual principle we should probably talk more about. But what about God? Could you give God a gift that would impress him? And just for context, talking about God. He made everything in the whole universe. If there's a multiverse, don't know. He made all those too, okay? Everything's his. Bible says he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. That's putting it mildly. The book of Revelation, it says the city he lives in is 1,200 miles long by 1,200 miles wide and is a 1,200 mile deep foundation made up exclusively of precious gems. Also, he paves the streets with gold. So, a lot of money. Could you give that guy a gift that would impress him? Answer is yes. Yes. You could give him yourself. 2 Corinthians 8:5 says they first gave themselves to the Lord. You can give more of your heart to him. And when that happens, the Bible says that God jumps up and down and twirls in the air. He's so excited to have more of your heart. But please hear me clearly if you hear nothing else. Do not try to tell God he has your heart if he doesn't have your treasure. Because he says where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. Where your treasure is. See, when we give God our treasure, he gets our hearts. That's the power of generosity, and it's what Mary did. So let's ask our last question. Why would Mary give such an extravagant and honestly weird, odd gift? Why would she do this? Well, the answer is actually found one chapter earlier. It records this scene from 2 months before the room we've been talking about. And her brother's been sick, Lazarus. He gets very, very sick, like on his deathbed, kind of sick. She's worried about him. And Jesus is 100 miles away. He's in another town, and there's no cars, there's no highways, there's no trains. And so she sends somebody off. Hey, please go get Jesus. Please bring him back. Because she's seen Jesus heal other people, and she just knows if Jesus were here, he could totally heal Lazarus. Unfortunately, Jesus doesn't get there in time. Bible says that when Jesus finally comes to town, Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. Dead. And Mary's just racked with grief. She's been crying and weeping and just shedding tears after tears. And it says, when she heard Jesus was close, she ran out to him. And I want you to listen for her posture and tell me if there's anything familiar in this scene. This is John 11. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Just imagine this. She runs out to Jesus, the man she believes is the Messiah, but she's racked with grief. So she's excited to see him, but she's just overcome with sadness and grief. And she falls down at his feet and she just starts to cry on his feet. And they're covered in dust because he's been walking for day after day after day. And as her tears hit the dust, it turns into mud. And so there's got to be something in there that's like, I'm muddying up the feet of the Messiah, and I'm so sad. I just imagine she takes her hair, and she starts to try to clean the mud off of his feet. But before she can finish, Jesus says, stand up and come with me. And he walks to the tomb where her dead brother is and says, Lazarus, come out, and brings him back to life. This jar, oil of spikenard, do you know it was embalming fluid, basically? It's what you would buy to pour on a precious loved one right before the final burial. I just imagine Mary had bought this jar in her grief, intending to pour it on her dead brother. Maybe she even went out with Jesus, holding it as she's crying at his feet, thinking, well, maybe he's here. I finally have the courage to walk in there and do this final act.
And so 2 months later, when Jesus returns, first time she's seen him since, she does the most natural thing. She takes that same jar and she cracks it open and she pours it on his feet and she starts wiping them with her hair. It's an extravagant offering. It's natural. Natural for her. Think about this. If one of your family members had been raised from the dead, do you think that would change how you approach giving to God? Would that change your mindset? If you had been raised from the dead, would that change how you might give to God? Well, if your answer is yes, let me just gently, gently remind all of us who believe we have been raised from the dead. Ephesians 2:1 says, "In you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins." See, you and I start off as Judas. We don't have a choice. We're born selfish. We start off as Judas, heart of selfishness. But we can make the same exact choice as Mary to have a heart of generosity because we have the same circumstance. Jesus has raised us and our loved ones from the dead. It's extravagantly generous of him. An extravagant offering, it's not about the amount. You know, the first time Sarah and I ever gave what I would consider an extravagant offering, it was about the feeling behind it. It felt extravagant to us in the moment. The first time was $500. It's about 15, 16 years ago. There were some friends, probably generous to call them friends, acquaintances of ours who were getting married. They had to pay for all of their wedding by themselves, and we knew they couldn't afford invitations. And so we just stepped in and we said, "Hey, we'd like to pay for that. You know, here's $500. Get yourself some nice invitations." We didn't even go to the wedding. Didn't really know them that well. I just felt like that was something that we wanted to do. Do you know what's crazy? More than 15 years later, those people are some of our closest friends in the whole world. Our kids call them aunt and uncle. You might know one of them. His name's Greg McElfresh. He's the Oakley campus pastor. See, God took $500 and he rewarded it, blessed it with more than 15 years of incredible friendship. Another extravagant offering that stands out is a number of years ago, a capital campaign at Crossroads. We were raising money to help build new sites so more people could hear about Jesus in a language they understand and do work all around the world to help change the world and make it more like the kingdom of God. And we just stepped into it and we said, "God, is there anything you would like us to give here?" We made an offer. It's not like we were sitting in our living room one day and God just dropped out of the sky and went, "I'd like you to give a whole lot of money." Didn't happen. We started the conversation. We made an offering. "God, is there anything you'd like us to give?" And sometimes when you do an offering, sometimes the answer back will be, "Well, whatever you want. Whatever you want." Just like when you offer a gift to somebody. "Hey, I'd like to buy you a gift. Is there anything you'd want?" "Oh, whatever you think." Sometimes that's the answer. And sometimes the answer is, "You know what? If you're offering, here's what I would like." And this is one of those moments. And what we got back, "Here's what I would like," was an extravagant offering. It wasn't a full year's salary. It wasn't this. But it was the majority of a year's salary. And we're a single income family. I work at a church. It's not like we're rolling in money, okay? It was like a big, big deal for us. And I'd love to say that we just immediately went, "Yes, God, of course, absolutely. We'll make that commitment. No big deal," you know? It's not what we did. It took us weeks to come around on it. Weeks of like, "Oh, God, well, you know, whoo, okay. Can we handle this? Can we handle this?" And then we had this moment where we went, "We don't have to. You can handle it." That's the promise you make. And we stepped in and we joyfully said, "God, you've been so extravagantly generous to us. We would love to be extravagantly generous toward you. We'd love you to have more of our heart because more's never done a good job taking care of my heart, but you have. I'd like you to have more of it." I'll tell you, in those years of paying off that commitment, I saw incredible things, things that I'd absolutely tie to the blessing of God. We got a free trip to Hawaii. That was crazy. We went from no college savings in the bank for our kids to a year's tuition in the bank. We bought a house on land we shouldn't have been able to afford. I got a car I shouldn't have been able to afford. All kinds of just crazy, crazy things. And I tell you, the benefit of those things is not the things themselves. Who cares? All that's going to fall apart. The benefit is the strength and faith that I have. I have less anxiety than before I made that gift. Why? Because God has more of my heart, and he's really good at taking care of it. He's proven to me that he can do it. It's amazing to me. And I just wonder about you today, as we come to the end of this series and you've sat through week after week, is there anything you'd like to say to God? Would you like to tell him he could have more of your heart? Would you like to back that up. You know, if you do, I'm just telling you, you will never regret it. Because God always rewards generosity. This is in the story of Mary. This story we've been reading out of the book of John. It's also in Matthew and Mark. I want you to listen for the reward that Jesus gives Mary in Mark 14. Jesus said, "Assuredly I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial to her." Jesus rewards her with eternal honor. 2,000 years later, we're still here. That's happening right now. It's true. You got to catch this. Mary did not give to get. Selfishness is when I give and then I think that I'm owed something. That's not generosity. Generosity is when I give expecting nothing in return. And the amazing miracle is that God always rewards that. God is a rewarder. This comes from Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6. "But without faith, it's impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him." That word rewarder from the Greek, it has five syllables. This is the only place in Scripture it shows up. The first four of those syllables basically add up to mean to pay what is due. But then there's this fifth syllable at the end that modifies the whole word, and it changes it to mean to pay extravagantly more than what is due. God is an extravagant rewarder. It means that he must reward. You know, God can't lie. Why can't God lie? Because God is truth. See, God can't not reward generosity because he is a rewarder. I'm telling you, I have seen it and I have experienced it. You've heard story after story of it as we've gone through this series, but the true reward is not money. And I think sometimes we get caught up in that. We hear these stories of money falling out of the sky, or I started to give and then I got blessed or whatever. And the true reward is not money. The true reward is riches, true riches, things that only God can make happen that even if you had all the money in the world, you could never buy. That's the reward. Things like your faith growing and strengthening. Things like you finally having the peace you've been searching for your whole life. Things like your family and you being saved and healed and made whole. That's true riches. Those things I just told you about that I would say God bless us with after our last extravagant, you know, above and beyond offering, those aren't what I consider the reward. The reward is during that time, both of my boys on their own came to me and said, "Dad, we want to get baptized." Now, you might go like, "Well, you're a preacher. You probably talk about baptism every night at the dinner table and, you know, convince your kids to do it. Always standing by with a hose, ready to spray them, you know, whatever." Promise that's not the case. I didn't want them to get baptized until they understood it. And so when they came to me, I raised the bar. I went, "Hey, that's good, but do you know what this means? This means you're saying to God, I will follow you no matter what my entire life. Do you understand that?" "Yes, Daddy, we do." "Okay, cool. Let me try again. This means if God came to you and he said, I want you to give away all of your toys, you would say yes." He went, "Yeah, we get it. We want to get baptized." "Okay, good enough for me. You know, great." And so November 19th, 2017, both of my boys were baptized, gave their lives to Jesus. That's a reward. That's a reward. I could never make that happen. I could never make that happen. And in those years since, you know, Sarah and I have continued to give above and beyond the tithe, and we continue to see God just show up and reward us and bless us with things that we could have never imagined. This summer, both of those boys helped me baptize my 68-year-old dad. Do you know how amazing that is? I never thought that would happen. It was incredible. That's a reward. And I'm telling you, if you'll step in, God has a reward for you too. If you'll give him more of your heart, if you'll trust him with it, he will take exceptional care of it. Exceptional. But don't tell him he has your heart if he doesn't have your treasure. Because he would say they're tied together. You know, for me, this question at the end, am I generous, is one I'm still asking. In no way, shape, or form do I look at my life and I go, good enough, I'm done, pack it in. You know, got that one, box checked, leave it alone, go live my life. In no way, shape, or form. This is a question I have to ask myself every single day in a place that I want to grow in. For Sarah and I, as we sat through this series, we're looking at what does it mean to step out more in generosity, and considering what our commitment will be to a thing called Trailblazers. It's a pilot thing we were invited into that basically allows designated above tithe giving. By the way, if you tithe, you'll be invited into this next year. So don't worry about it. Don't get hung up on it. We just give that as an example to say we're stepping out further. And I don't say that so you'll think more of me. I am not the most generous person in this room. I'm positive of that. It's not. There's actually nothing less I'd rather share with you than my giving. It just makes me like, ugh, you know? I only say that to say this is personal for me. This is personal for me, and I've experienced so much of God that I can't help but step out further. And I just wonder, would you take a step today? We're going to have a prayer moment in just a minute to some music. I'm going to give you a minute of silence. And I want you to do one of two things. One is, if you haven't taken God up on the test, on the tithe, I want you to sit and listen. Tithing is about listening to what he's saying to you. And you've heard it. And I want you to consider saying back to him, God, I'm still nervous, but okay. Okay. And again, I'll just say, if you don't trust Crossroads, that's fine. Don't give it here. Go give it to a church you do trust. That's okay. But listen to God. Don't let us be your barrier. Listen to him. Second, maybe you're already here. Maybe you're already tithing. I want you to sit in this moment, and rather than listen to God, I want you to say something to him. Is there anything you'd like to say to him, an offering you might like to commit to him? I'll give you this minute. Pray with me. God, I'm just so grateful. As we come to the end of this series, I am so grateful how you're just generous to me. Thank you for saving me. Thank you for saving my wife. Thank you for saving my kids. Thank you for saving my dad. Thank you for letting me be a part of it. You're so generous, God. Would you give me the courage to make an offering to you, to follow through in what you're asking? I just ask for everybody in this room, God, give us the clear eyes to see who you really are and the hearts to trust you. Amen. Well, this is the end of The Blessed Life. Next week, we start a new series that's perfect for inviting a friend to. Brian will be talking about the belief that we all have, that we don't belong, but doing it through the lens of my favorite Christmas movie, Elf. Yeah, right? Oh, I wasn't supposed to say that. I was supposed to be coded about it. Yeah, it's Elf, whatever. If you're wondering, will Brian wear the yellow tights? The answer is absolutely yes. Absolutely. Don't miss it. See you next time.
Hey.